Welcome to another episode of Allen Insurance and Financial's Life's Risks and Rewards podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Chamberlain.
And I'm his co-host, Tom Chester. We are both of Allen Insurance and Financial. I hope you enjoy our latest podcast.
We have our very own Abe Dougal. Abe is a fellow employee owner. He's a financial advisor in our Chestnut Street office. And I have a little bio from the website, Abe. I'm going to read, pull out some parts here.
Go for it.
Abe is a graduate of Camden Hills Regional High School. He went to Babson College in Wellesley, Mass., where he majored in business management with a concentration in finance. He holds the FINRA Series 66 and 7 securities licenses and is a certified financial planner professional. He's worked in the financial services industry in the Boston area for almost 10 years before returning home to Midcoast, Maine in 2015. Prior to joining Allen Insurance and Financial, he worked for nearly 7 years at Cambridge Associates, a global investment management firm. He was director of U.S. investment operations for CA, overseeing a department of 45 staff and 4 offices serving more than 300 foundation, endowment, pension, and private wealth clients. He also worked for nearly 2 years at Fidelity Charitable, the largest donor-advised fund in the U.S.
Yeah, that's a mouthful.
It is. And I didn't stumble
there. Crammed
a lot
in. That's, you know, those first few years of your career, you kind of make your resume as stacked as you can, right?
Yeah. You know, and I'm really fascinated by this. I'm fascinated on the relocation back to the Midcoast, you know, where you grew up, where your family is, being in Boston and being in that corporate environment for as long as you were. Take me back there. Like, what was in your mind? What was in the decision with you and your wife?
How did you end up picking Babson over the other schools?
Yeah, that's a lot. I'll start with the schools because chronologically that might make sense. But you get something in your mind as a child, I think, and you stick to it sometimes. And I did a project in eighth grade with my math teacher where we had just a sort of open-ended opportunity to pick a project. And I did a stock picking project where I just picked a few stocks. Back then, we were still using the newspaper to get the ticker symbols and the prices. And we tracked it up on a big piece of paper and we just charted how things moved. And from that point on, it was kind of a running joke with my math teacher that I'd be a financier. She liked to say the word that way. I never really ended up doing that, but I did have a passion for investments and for finance. And through that and through high school, I really kind of buckled down my junior year when I realized how competitive applying for schools were. And I had a fairly active engagement in high school with lots of athletics and clubs and things like that.
Abe could dunk in high school.
Really?
I don't know. We want to spread that rumor. There's no video evidence, but it is true. I think someone saw me do it once.
Abe is, he's almost 10 years exactly to the day younger than I am. So it was still in that stone age of there was no video, but
no.
I've been told by Abe and
My wife saw it, so there's proof. If you have to ask, she saw me in college.
She will swear up and down that is
probably
an accurate thing.
She would. Yes, that was about all I was good at basketball. It was a fun time, but really looking through the school and the opportunities that were out there, we kind of have the three Bs. That was what they called it back then, Babson, Bentley, Bryant. I visited all of those. I applied to Bentley and Babson, Northeastern, Lehigh, and UMaine. But Babson was really always where I wanted to go. I just liked the campus. Coming from a small town, it had a small vibe, a small campus. There's only about 1,500 undergraduates. Unfortunately, I got in. You never know if you're going to or not. But that was what really started my course down the financial services industry. In terms of what brought me back, it was really serendipitous. Honestly, it was not something that was planned or mapped out. I had never thought that I'd move back necessarily to Midcoast Maine. My wife, Anna, and I had talked about potentially moving to Southern Maine at some point, but everything just aligned as it sometimes does in life, where Mike Pierce had reached out to me and asked if I might be interested, and we had a meeting, and from there, we had another meeting, and then the opportunity sort of built itself out of that. And ultimately, at the time, Anna was between jobs. I had a 2-year-old son. The commute was rough. I also managed an office in Arlington, Virginia, because my manager had given their notice. So I was going to Arlington, Virginia every week for 2 or 3 nights, and kids grow up fast. And when that opportunity presented itself to have potentially a little more balance, obviously it was a big leap of faith for both parties to see whether or not I could be a financial advisor. It's not exactly what I was doing in Boston, but I could speak the language. I knew people here, and so it ended up being a great fit.
There is a big transition to go from Cambridge Associates research, institutional clients, to retail financial advising. When you did it, what was the biggest adjustment? I know what it was for me, but...
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, fortunately, the way that Cambridge Associates constructs its portfolios is it's manager driven. Mm-hmm. So they're not stock picking. They're actually doing research to figure out who are the best in class investment managers. And that's very similar to how we run our book of business here and how we work with our clients, where we're trying to find the best investment managers that know how to pick stocks and construct portfolios that way. But for me, the largest change or the biggest challenge coming from the former environment at Cambridge Associates to here is size, of course, you know, a few different zeros in terms of the size of clients, but I'd never really been at the forefront of the selling aspect. So I had clients, I knew where they were coming from. I was never worried about where they'd come from next. You didn't really have to invest in the same way that you do here so that people know who you are, that you can build trust with those people and that they feel comfortable with you managing their very hard-earned dollars. And that's been a big adjustment. It's been a positive adjustment. I enjoy those interactions, but it is a challenge for sure.
Yeah, and it fascinates me because I'm sure there's a lot of young professionals who grew up here and have moved away from Maine. And as they're thinking of starting families, there's a lot of attraction of coming back to the Mid-Coast. And I'm sure there's a lot of fear there. Where are there jobs available? Can I make as much? Do I need to make as much? You know, there's going to be opportunity for career advancement, et cetera. And while there isn't as many opportunities here as there are in the city, there's more unique opportunities. And there's some, I don't know if we do a good enough job, professionals that live here, and like doing our job to like attract that talent to our area.
All we have to do is go down there, get on the commuter rail and say, hey, do you like doing this every day?
Yeah, hour and 45 minutes each way.
Yeah. What was your commute?
It was an hour each way. It involved, so we lived on the Salem Common, which was a really awesome place to live. So I took the commuter rail. So it was about a 10 to 15 minute walk to the commuter rail. If you timed it perfectly, you got on the train you intended to. If there were no train breakdowns, you got to North Station in about 35 minutes. And then you had to make a decision, mainly based on the weather. Do I walk the 20 minutes to the office to financial district, or
also,
do you jump on the T?
It depended on what shoes you were wearing, because if they were like new Bostonians, they were going to rip your feet up.
No, you kind of get into a routine. You know, I had all my shoes at the office, right? So I wore sneakers. It was like
you were that guy.
Yeah, you weren't jogging, but you were almost jogging, and you had a backpack, and everybody else had a backpack.
Well, let's go back to that then. So for the young professionals that are living in Boston right now, or they are living in New York City, and they're on the fence of coming back to raise their families, have their career. What are the pros and cons? Give me some cons of, let's do the city first. Pros of the city, cons of the city.
Well, I think the biggest pro, you know, in many ways, for better or worse, is that you're surrounded by a lot of the same people, that, you know, everybody talks like you, looks like you, has aspirations like you. You have built-in social networks, built-in professional networks, even within just a single building floor, you know, you're all wrapped up in that. By the time I was transitioning away from Cambridge to move here, I was kind of old, you know, I was 29. I left at 31. I was a manager, a director, and my employees were all between 23 and 26. And that was how those organizations ran. Much of the middle management were people in their early to mid 30s. And then the upper management were quite young as well. So that was a big pro for me. You just had, you know, a lot of people pushing you, a lot of people that were really trying to get to the next level. And so that pushed you and motivated you to go a little bit harder. Obviously, some of the challenges of that are that, you know, there was no management training program. So you sort of learned on the job. And I had some successes and failures in that, like most people do, as you learn how to do that. And that was a stress, right? So there's the stress there. There's the expectations that create stress. There's the commute that creates stress. There's the being away from your family that creates stress. You know, what am I missing? You know, what's Everett going to do today? Is he going to walk? Is he going to talk? And so there's just trade-offs. And I don't know that I'd even classify anything as pros and cons so much as it's just what's important to you. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I knew, even when I made the decision, as much as I'd like to think I would, that it would be a huge boost to my, you know, personal life, just having more time with my family It's allowed me to invest my time in the community through volunteer work, both with youth athletics and some nonprofit boards, all things that you strive for in the city. But in that time, when you're building your career, unless you're really lucky or you're really focused and targeted at doing that, it's not something that comes easily. And if you have a commute from the city, I think one of the big pros of the city is if you live in the city and work in the city, like in Boston proper, it's not as much of a challenge, but that's hard to do financially. And so we lived a little bit ways away. So by the time you got home, you know, basically it was dinner and time for bed. Yeah. You know, you didn't get, I never got home before 7:45 p.m.
No, and it's one of those things where, oh, 7:45, jeez. Most normal people are, you know, wrapping it up by now.
Yeah, 7:45 was my early arrival to home. So just enough time to put our son to bed.
And now in Maine, 7:45, you're already in bed for a half an hour.
Camden's pretty much shut down by 7:45. Yeah, yeah. Especially in the winter. So it's different.
So for the young professionals that are debating on the fence of coming back to Maine, it's quality of life. We've got the quality of life up here. Best of both worlds.
You can go watch your kids play sports and things like that.
Yeah, or make a really interesting decision to coach them and see how that works. But I would say, you know, that the move overall was amazing. I mean, fortunately, I had some friends that lived here as well. And I will say that we could do a better job. There's an opportunity, certainly for the people growing up here, the young people growing up here, to educate them about what their opportunity set is. But for me, Allen Agency was just a team I played in Y-ball, you know, and I didn't really know what they did. I knew where they were. I kind of had a sense of what insurance was, but not really any great deal of knowledge. And so there is an opportunity to educate for sure.
Yeah. And Tom, you've been here for a long time. How many years have you been?
Since 2004, whatever number of years that is. Trying to do that math in my head. Not quite 20. But yeah, it's that same kind of thing where you're looking at it, you're like, what is my networking going to be like? How am I going to do these different things? Am I going to have a social life? But, you know, when your kid calls you sick from the nurse's office, you can go grab him, bring him home.
Yeah. And we live in such a phenomenal, like, outdoor recreational area. I mean, you have some of the best mountain biking in the state right in our backyard. You have skiing when it does snow. Mm-hmm. You have golf courses, 3 different golf courses you can play within 5-10 minute drive. And, you know, a lot of people do come here in the summertime, but there's recreation year round, and it's all right at our fingertips.
Yeah, I think one of the other aspects of living here that's, you know, underappreciated at times, and sometimes it can be a challenge too, depending on how you look at it, but it's a community, right? So you have communities in the city and in the suburbs. They work a little differently, but no matter what you need, I think what I find most wonderful about this area, beyond all those great things you just mentioned, Patrick, is the fact that if you need something, you have a bunch of people, friends or not, that are going to come and show up for you in whatever capacity that might be. And that, to me, is what it's all about. That's that community, that you're there for your neighbor, that you're there for your friends, and that you drop everything if you had to help them out.
Now, professionally, how many years now have you been in financial services total?
Eight years at Allen next month.
And how many prior to?
And then 9 years before that.
Yeah, so you got 17 years.
Yep.
So in the 17 years of being in the financial services industry, what's one thing that you know now that you wish you had known when you were starting out?
That's a great question. I mean, initially, I think I was just under pressure to get a job. So in a lot of ways, you know, you're on your own, you need to pay rent. And you apply to a lot of aspirational jobs. I did too. I applied to some fixed income trading jobs, some financial analyst jobs. And ultimately, I ended up doing fund administration, which isn't the most glamorous job, but it paid the bills and it sort of got me in the door. But what I wish I knew back then was that you should never feel like you have to choose a path and stick to it 100%. A lot of times, the greatest success comes from taking a risk and taking a job that you may otherwise not consider. And that in many ways led to my success at Cambridge Associates. I joined a group that was only 2 other people besides myself. It had a very amorphous name, Client Operations Group. In fact, that name has changed because it doesn't mean anything to most people. But ultimately what it was, and I would have had no idea when I applied, was we dealt with all of the most challenging and highest profitable clients in the firm. And so I had a very high profile early on with very little experience. And embracing that was really what took me where it did at Cambridge Associates. And I'm very thankful for that. Shout out to Charles Silva, if he's listening. He is the one that hired me and was a good mentor. But those are the things that, you know, you can't be afraid to make mistakes. As long as you really do your best by your clients, by your coworkers, you're going to end up being successful.
And I'm going to piggyback off that question with the financial industry would be better off if, fill in the blank.
I think if more people did it for the right reasons, which is ultimately at the end of the day, in my view, and why I enjoy this job is to help people. You know, how many people have you helped achieve their goals? How many people have you helped better understand the financial world? It's something that as a society, I think we're lacking, and that's a very big opportunity in high school or wherever you're getting your education to learn more, because personal finance is so critical to having a successful life. And while I'm thankful that leads to a job opportunity, and in many ways would still be a job opportunity if people had better education around that, I think that the industry as a whole should be more focused on doing good.
That's a great answer, because that sums it up. You are right on that.
And you might ask, well, what are the right reasons? And I said a couple of those things, but unfortunately, because of some financial advisors or other financial industry people, you know, we have a lot of regulation, and some of it's very necessary, but a lot of it's born out of the fact that people take advantage of people. And that's just not what this business is about. It's really all about, you know, what can I do to help this person get one step closer to their retirement goals or to their college savings goals? How can I answer a question to make them feel more comfortable?
Yeah, I always get fascinated by the whole retirement conversation as well, because a lot of people are talking about save for retirement, how much to save. Well, that's like not the right question to ask. I feel like it's like, how much do I need for retirement? Reverse engineer it.
Yeah.
If you want to live going to Florida, you know, for the winters and doing this and that, well, you're going to need a lot more money than if you live in a very small house that you own and your monthly expenses aren't high. People could retire much sooner than they're on path to.
Nobody ever says, gee, I wish I saved less. So
no one ever says that, right?
No, nobody ever says, ugh, I put too much away.
It's not common to have that happen. That's not a normal everyday answer, though. I think you're right, Patrick. I think the challenge with that is how much, and that's something that we try to help answer through a lot of sophisticated analysis and software. There is no exact answer, but ultimately, you know, I view this in all of my client relationships. You can't abandon the present for the future 100%. I mean, I definitely think there's sacrifice involved so that you're saving and you're mindful. But yeah, ultimately, it's going to matter a lot how much money you need to spend to live, and that's going to dictate what you need for retirement. And I think we use that term, especially in Maine, that term doesn't apply in the most basic definition, retirement, like full stop, I'm not working, you know, can I stop working? It means different things to every person. And when you go through it, I don't think you really know until you do go through it. And that's the benefit of our practice, right? Is we have a lot of clients that have gone through it or are going through it, and it gives us a little glimpse into what that looks like.
I want to go away from business type talk, and I want to ask you, what is one thing that you really want to learn how to do?
Wow, that's a good question. I mean, I've invested a fair amount of time in the things that I've wanted to know how to do already.
Well, you learned plumbing yesterday.
Yesterday, we learned some plumbing. Tom was kind enough to install a new dishwasher.
I helped. But then, you know, you buttoned it up and got that pipe not leaking.
Yeah, well, that's in big thanks to Darren Robbins, Robbins Plumbing.
So. I didn't want to break the pipe and have a flood.
Yeah, so. That's a great question. I mean, I've thought about lots of things, dabbled in lots of things, but I think you get to almost 40. I mean, I'll be 40 in a week. Exactly.
Oh, boy.
And you've done a lot, right? And you kind of know what you are passionate about and what you like. There's lots of things that I already do that I could get better at. And that's sort of where I focus my time, whether it be cooking or coaching.
Golf.
I don't know. I may abandon that. That's
not... You ready
don't,
to give
don't
it up?
Don't pull a Patrick Chamberlain and abandon golf. I do that every time I get frustrated and I don't have the time.
That's a good answer. That was in the pandemic. I really pulled that back out and played a lot, and I didn't get that much better. I was a serviceable player. But I think if I had to say something concrete about what I'd like to learn more about or get better at, I'd have to say it's just being more handy in general, like construction, being able to do more of my home projects. I have great friends that help me out, but you know, I'd like to be more self-sufficient in those areas.
See, he's soft pedaling the fact that he knows everything there is to know about wine. He's a great cook.
Yeah, he's basically sitting there saying, well, I already know how to do everything. How am I going to answer this question?
No, he's... more along the lines of, you know, he's an amazing chef and knows everything about wine. Whenever I have a wine question, I'm like, oh, what would Abe do? What would Abe do?
What would
Abe Dougal do?
I learned, I don't know everything there is to know about wine. It's a long stretch. That's still something that's an interest of mine that I'm learning a lot about all the time. There's no way to know everything. My dad sort of instilled that interest in me. And so there's a lot. I'm someone that really enjoys a lot of things. That's a challenge, I think, for some people where, you know, you can kind of go down and start trying to learn all kinds of things. One thing I regret not knowing how to do that I don't think I'll ever try to do is playing an instrument, but it's fun to watch my son try to do that.
And it's interesting you say that because I've asked this question to everyone that's been on the podcast and the most popular answer has been, I want to learn how to play the piano.
Piano. What's a good place to start?
Yeah. I think three different people have answered that question.
Really? That's the one I immediately, like golf and piano. I was like, I tried for like 15 minutes and gave up immediately.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised that that's the answer.
Yeah. So
not that I haven't listened to all of your podcasts, you know, intently.
Well, I mean, I know that you've listened to all of them multiple times. Abe's listened to all of them at least once. And
that's true.
And we're excited for season two this year. So thank you for coming on the podcast, Abe.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. And it's been a great opportunity to be here at Allen Insurance and Financial. I really appreciate that opportunity. And, you know, one of those things that you look forward to is how does that evolve and change over time? And how can you improve your community? And how can you improve the business and the outcomes for your clients?
Yeah, good. We'll keep you around for a little while longer, I guess.
This is Tom Chester. And for Patrick Chamberlain, thank you for listening. At Allen Insurance and Financial, we offer insurance and financial planning products that help individuals, families, businesses, and organizations of all types navigate life's risks and rewards. For more about this podcast, the services we offer, and the great team of people who offer them, visit allenif.com/podcast. Until next time, have a great one.